The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
All right, folks, welcome back to Straight Talk Money. I'm your host, Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, and Charles Sizemore in studio also. Anyway, we have a guest we've had on many times before, Stephen Schork. He publishes the Schork Report, which is a fundamental and technical analysis of the energy markets. As many of you know, we're very pro-energy at Roberts Wealth Management. Anyway, welcome back to the show, sir.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us this morning. Anyway, in looking at your newest report, I noticed, you know, some of your research has, you know, crude at neutral. So does that note we're kind of in a range where you think crude's going to stick for the next 24 months or so?
Well, we've had a nice run higher in the crude oil market since the debacle in the fourth quarter. So everyone in the market seems to want to talk about, or at least in the media, wants to talk about this incredible rally that we've had over the first 4 months of this year. But it fails, in my perspective, to put the entire market into context. We have to keep in mind that crude oil prices, and let's just take the June 2019 NYMEX WTI contract, which is the current spot contract. If you had purchased that contract back in September and October at its highs of around $75 a barrel, today you are still losing a considerable amount of money on that position. So that puts this rally into perspective. And what am I talking about here? Well, last summer we had record demand for crude oil, we had record demand for gasoline, and we had a rise in WTI prices to about $70 a barrel last summer. By the end of August, oil prices were coming off. That makes sense. The summer driving season is over. The refineries are preparing for fall turnarounds. They're going to be buying fewer barrels in the month of September and October. But between the middle of August and the end of September, we had a $10 rally in oil prices, all on speculation of the November 1st implementation of the sanctions on Iran. That rally was fueled by speculators on Wall Street. Now, they bid prices in September in the weakest demand part of the year, $75 a barrel. Now, that market crashed 91% by the end of December. So, yes, we've had a greater than 50% rise in oil prices since those December lows, but that was simply a rebalancing of the market in price. So, in our daily report, we have gone neutral for the time being, but we're still holding a bearish bias in the products. What I'm getting at here is the market is behaving extremely well. That is to say, commodity markets work seasonality. Think of a sine wave. We have our ebbs, we have our flows. Right now, we are still in the midst of the refinery turnaround season, so we're buying fewer barrels of crude oil. So hence, we are limited on our upside. But I will add, in the weeks, months ahead, as those refineries come out of their maintenance season and they start buying more barrels, that will lend support to the market. So regardless of all of the geopolitical headlines, on the demand side, we have the ongoing trade rift with China. On the supply side, there are issues with Libya. Of course, there are issues with Venezuela, and as we know, first and foremost, the situation with Iran. So there are certainly some, these are the known unknowns, the black swan events that we know potentially can hurt the market. Regardless, we're not seeing any kind of untoward pricing action in the market. Market is behaving extremely well, and I'm very impressed. And to me, my takeaway, this is a market that is in balance at this point.
Wow, that's good news.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we've noticed that we've found interesting is that energy and equities have been tracking each other for some time.
Yep. Well, I tell you what, commodity prices, well, you know, and I'll let you finish your thought, but we have to keep in mind that commodity prices are the premier leading indicator. You do not get strong commodity prices without a strong economy, and so hence commodity prices and equities ought to be linked.
Yeah, that is an interesting point about commodities being a leading indicator. Most people don't really think of it in those terms, but it's you're right about that. It's also interesting. You know, most people tend to think that traders react to supply and demand fundamentals, and they sort of lag that. But as you were saying, last summer, towards the end of the summer, when normal demand trends should have suggested falling prices, it was the speculators that ended up sending prices just really abnormally high. So, funny how that works.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and we have to keep in mind when we're talking about the NYMEX, we're talking about futures contracts. So sure. we're talking about, obviously, the future. So that is not reflective of the here and the now, the ongoing demand in the spot market. And, of course, commodities, physical commodities, are determined and are explained in the spot market. So the futures trade less on fundamentals and more on the perception of potential impacts to the market, and hence why we do get a significant amount of speculation. I also want to bring home the fact that we seem to want to talk about perception and about commodity prices. And I bet there's going to be a lot of teeth gnashing this summer when gasoline prices are well above $3, $3.20 perhaps, in the summer highs, and people are going to complain about that. And I want to tell people, stop complaining and start being appreciative of it. People will start complaining like they did last summer. Oh, gasoline prices were at a four-year high. Really? Really? Do you really want to go back to 4 years ago when the Dow was below 17,000 and the unemployment rate was double what it is today? Oil prices are normally priced right now, and that is reflective of a rebound in the economy. Appreciate the fact that you're paying more than $3 a gallon at the pump. That's a good sign for the economy in general.
Well, yeah, back in 2015 when prices started to collapse in the energy markets, that was not good for Texas. That was not good for any of us. So,
it was not good for my home state here. Yeah, sure. Was not good in Texas. I'm here in Pennsylvania. It wasn't good for my home state here either.
Yeah, the way I always tell people is that a gallon of gasoline should cost more than a gallon of milk.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's put things into perspective. When we're looking at $3.10, $3.20, a lot of this, California in general, is reflective of a massive increase over the last 5 years on state taxes levied on gasoline prices. So it has more to do with government fiat than it does with supply-demand economics in the market. But even putting that aside, at $3.20, gasoline today is still cheaper than it was in 1981 when you adjust for inflation. That's incredible. You're talking about a commodity. It's only harder to get out of the ground, get to the market. Demand has only increased over the last two generations, and yet the price of that commodity is cheaper today than it was when I was in junior high school.
When you think about how much India has grown, how much China has grown, how much Latin America has grown, that really is remarkable.
Absolutely, and it is a feather in the cap to the people in your home state. In my home state here in Pennsylvania, the shale gal in fracking, the increases in productivity of getting commodities to market is, three cheers for capitalism, right?
There you go.
Yeah, no, I agree. What are your thoughts on natty gas going forward?
I tell you, I am just a woe begone natural gas bull at this point. Right now, the market cannot be any more bearish. We don't have any weather in the market, and hence why we have the greatest thus far start to a natural gas refill season into storage. So we were looking at a 350 billion cubic feet year-on-year deficit looking at supply. And inside of 2 months, we've turned a 350 BCF deficit into over a 100 BCF surplus. So right now, if we do not get any sort of weather demand, that is lots of cooling demand where power generations have to run a lot of natural gas to keep those ACs powered, it's going to be a long, hot summer for the natural gas market.
Yeah, I agree. All right, folks, you're listening to Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, Charles Sizemore, Stephen Shork of The Shork Report. We'll be right back after these important announcements. Nobody
told you. The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, we have Stephen Shork joining us today. Of course, he is the editor-in-chief and the, the brains behind the Shork Report. Really, really good information, folks. If you are someone that watches energy. This is a guy that dials it right down to the nitty-gritty. So welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Thanks, Peggy. Great to be here.
And overall, of course, from the first segment that you were on with us, things look really quite positive. Of course, I want to ask you, because you did mention geopolitical, and of course, we're seeing this whole thing with China and the U.S. and the trade, and also we've got what's going on in Iran, and of course, this morning, I believe it was, they announced that they're even going to start, they're pulling out of the, a little bit of the nuclear pact, and so what kind of tensions might that have on the markets looking forward?
Well, I think, Peggy, that the market is taking this with a grain of salt. If anyone really out there believes that Iran now is going to start not abiding by this nuclear degree, and it's now they're going to do it, and they've been abiding by it up until this point, well, I tell you what, people, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you. So that is really not news here. Come on. So and I think the market is really appreciative of this. With Iran, we've seen their oil exports over the past 2 years fall on average by 25%. So Iran, at about 1.1 million barrels a day, excuse me, of exports, they're down now to pre-sanction levels. So the country is in dire straits.
Down
so
to
let's
pre-sanction
say
levels.
Absolutely. So they had a nice boost, and so the economy is in trouble, and the time now is to make Iran play ball. So I think a lot of the impact of Iran was the potential of the Trump administration desire to get those exports, what remaining exports Iran has, down to zero. Now, of course, that's not going to happen. China, we have headlines that Europe are going to not allow it, but regardless, it's still a tremendous economic impact. But let's just play fantasy world, and let's just assume that Iran loses and we take 1.1 million barrels of remaining Iranian exports out of the market. Well, U.S. production this summer is going to be 1.6 million barrels a day greater than it was last summer. And last summer, the United States increased its exports of crude oil by nearly 900,000 barrels a day. A lot of the bottlenecks that we saw have been cleared up. So more U.S. oil will make it to the global market. When you juxtapose that with Saudi Arabia, which now is about 400,000 barrels a day lower than their peak in 2012, that, again, that is potential capacity that the Saudis could bring online. I don't think the market the market is really discounting the news out of Iran. Iran's making a lot of noise, but when you're a rat trapped into a corner, your only game plan now is to make a lot of noise and make really silly threats that you're going to do something that you've been doing all along, and everyone knows you're doing it. So with regard to Iran, I think the greatest threat, the greatest black swan out there, is some sort of military conflict in the Gulf, in the Arabian. Well, if you're talking to a Sunni, it would be the Arab Gulf. If you're talking to the Shia, it's the Persian Gulf. Regardless, that body of water in the Strait of Hormuz, where a significant amount of the world's oil flows through, if you see any sort of disruption to the flow, that I think is about the only bullish factor that Iran could add to the market right now.
That's where World War III will happen.
But the U.S. Didn't they just move some they're moving a carrier into that region as well as some bombers?
Yes, absolutely. The United States is moving its military asset, naval assets into the market, not unlike what Reagan did in the 80s at the height of the Iran-Iraq war, when Iran, again, tried to play politics with mining the Persian Gulf. The United States took care of it in the 1980s, and I'm fully confident the United States will keep that shipping lane clear this time around as well.
Interesting.
What about Russia?
You're talking about Russia. They're doing any sort of a machination out there that keeps them relevant on the global stage. So they've got their hands, of course, in Venezuela. But once again, we're talking about Russia, Putin. This is Russia's last hurrah. We're talking about a country, people, where the life expectancy of males trails that of most sub-Saharan countries. So you're looking at Russia trying to make hay while the sun is shining, but Russia, one generation from now, will fail to be the player that they are today, and they know it, Putin knows it, and so this is something that the market will have to deal with the volatility of being the squeaky wheel out there. But their impact on the market at this point relative to the larger players, the United States and China, namely, Russia's impact is de minimis.
Interesting. I didn't know that Russia's expected life expectancy of males was...
I want to say it's in the mid-50s, isn't it? I mean, it's like shockingly low.
Yeah. It is shockingly low, and look, we're still dealing with the older generations of Russia, and I always make the comparison to Moses leaving the Israelites to the promised land. There's a reason why God made the Jews wander around the desert for 40 years, because you had to kill off all that generation of that still maintained that slave mentality. So Russia, Russia's only about maybe a half or two thirds of the way of killing off that communist generation, that Putin generation. So Russia still has a long ways to go before they really reach their own promised land.
Well, they probably never will, with their population already shrinking. There's no way back from that. You know, that's the Japan's going with the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh. We have an OPEC meeting coming up in June. Are you expecting any surprises coming out of that?
No, and with regard to OPEC, in their decision making process, of course, geopolitics is going to be first and foremost. And look, there's a reason why the Saudis just raised their official selling price for their oil going to Europe and Asia, and they cut it to the United States. They cut it to the United States because they cut the price on Arab light crude oil. The United States is swimming. You can't swing a cat in the United States without hitting a barrel of light, sweet crude oil. So the Saudis are cutting price on oil to the United States that the United States can easily replace. At this point, what we're seeing here is that you're in a seller's market now. The sanctions on Iran raises the price for oil bought by Asia and Europe. So the Saudis are raising their price because it's a free call option at this point. So from that standpoint, you're looking at a situation where the United States is in a very advantageous position over the next 6 to 12 months.
All right, folks. Well, this is... an exceptional technical analysis from Stephen. Anyway, we're bumping up against a break. Looks like the markets are still pretty flat by definition. You're listening to Straight Talk Money with Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, Charles Sizemore, Stephen Schwark. You can join in. StraightTalkMoney.com. We'll be right back after these important announcements. Working on a
night moon. The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. Of the season
for love. All right, folks, welcome back to Straight Talk Money. I'm your host, Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, Charles Sizemore. Anyway, we've been talking with Stephen Schwark this morning from the Schwark Report. Great fundamental and technical analysis of the energy markets. www.schwarkreport.com. Contact at theschwarkreport.com. If you're interested in subscribing or getting a copy. Great stuff for those looking to do some energy homework. So,
well, I have a question coming in from the audience, and I this is, of course, from Grant in Denver. And Grant, I just want to say great minds think alike, because I wrote down myself one of the same questions that you were asking. But first of all, Stephen, what he would like to know is if you're looking at long-term expectations, what are the expectations of oil actually remaining the dominant energy source looking ahead?
You know, it's an excellent question. You know, just as an anecdote, I'm an oil and gas guy. I've been an oil and gas guy since I came out of university in the late 1980s. And I own an electric hybrid car right now, and it's unbelievable. I'm getting a blended mileage of 40 miles to the gallon, and it's an SUV. So clearly, the genie's out of the bottle in that respect. So that said, I do think that there is a balance in the market, but I do think that oil is not going away. It's going to remain a significant player. Yes, I would say a dominant player, because I do believe the answer is in hybrid technology at this point. Unless we make leaps and bounds with battery technology, and that's entirely possible. But certainly, I do think that it is the dominant energy source for at least my generation. So that said, where are we with price? Because there is now. We've reached the bounds of demand inelasticities. There are two things, keep in mind, going back to economics 101, that change a consumer's behavior. We always had that first variable in the equation, that is to say, the price shock, going back to the early 70s with the Arab oil embargo. So from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, we've had our peaks and troughs of extreme movements in price, which in a short term altered behavior. But so when we had the spikes back in the mid-70s, early 80s, early 90s, mid-2000s, we had a significant drop-off in demand. But that was short-lived because as soon as prices corrected, demand bounced back. That's not happening to the same degree this time around because now we have that other variable in the equation, the substitute. So with that substitute, there is now a limit on how high oil prices could go. I will venture the highs that we saw last summer, that is Brent crude oil in the 80 to low 80s, WTI low 70s to mid 70s. To me, that is the high in the market because anything above that level begins to now really lower the entry barrier for alternative fuels. And whether you're a producer in the Permian, a producer in the Bakken, or a producer in Ghanwar in Saudi Arabia, you are sensitive to that fact. So there is a limit on how high you want to see prices go because you really do not want to cede any more market share that's naturally going to occur over the next generation. So the bottom line is oil will still be a significant contributor to the energy complex, but its power, it's no longer the dominant. The inelasticities for oil demand are no longer a perfect one. That will continue to erode over the next two generations. It's not going to go away, but it is going to keep a lid on prices. Therefore, now I'm not an investor, an equities guy, so I couldn't give you specific companies. I would not. But certainly the play from an investment standpoint is it's going to come down to productivity and who can squeeze the most out of the least going forward in this arena.
I think that's an interesting point. The oil is sort of in a natural range right now where if prices get too high, you just open the floodgates of new supply comes online, and you also again encourage the acceleration of alternative energy. Prices get too low, the Saudis just turn off the tap for a while. So it's really a recipe for a range bound market for a long time.
Well, I think one thing to think about is you formulate an investment thesis around energy is that for energy companies to do well, oil prices don't need to get any higher than what Stephen has mentioned. They just need to stick in that range.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, the U.S. oil companies, absolutely. But it gets down to the situation with our friends over in the Middle East. These are kleptocracies for the most part that have been taking something out of the ground and selling it unfettered for multi generations now, and they haven't had to innovate, and they haven't innovated. So they are producing something that they absolutely need a price on. It doesn't matter that it only costs a couple of dollars a barrel for the Saudis to take a BTU out of the ground when they've got their budget set at $80-$85 a barrel. The U.S. companies aren't like that. They've had to adapt. And there was, as you know, and everyone in the Texas area listening, knows better than I, the bloodbath that occurred in this market at the end of 14, 15, throughout 16. And that forced the retrenchment in the market. And to your point, guys, a U.S. producer does not nearly need the price that a Middle East producer does because of the productivity gains that we've seen in this industry over just the past 3 years alone. So it is it's a very dicey proposition that the U.S. certainly, I would venture, anything above $50, $55 a barrel for a large U.S. producer, they'll take that. Seven ways to Sunday. They'd be more than happy at that price. Where $55, $60 a barrel for a Venezuela, for an Iran, Iraq, Nigeria, so forth, is downright near catastrophic for those economies.
End of the world. Yep.
Yeah, Nigeria has so many. They have so many problems with low oil prices and their currency fluctuations. But good oil, I enjoy drilling out kind of off the waters of Nigeria and Ghana. Those are some crazier days. It feels like many lifetimes ago. The other thing to really think about in oil prices is just, you know, there's on the midstream side, you know, volumes, especially volumes coming out of the Permian. You know, is TransCanada going to get their, you know, their infrastructure through? Will the Trump administration lighten up on the GOM? You know, the Obama administration made it so expensive to explore Gulf of Mexico. You know, will that play come back? So, you know, there's a lot of unknown and kind of the what I would say there's a lot of upside in energy equities, but it's a good place to be, especially for dividend collectors.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point where you were just touching upon, it's the infrastructure play here. So we still have a lot of disconnects in the market. Of course, here I'm in Pennsylvania, just outside Philly. In the central and western part of our state, of course, we have the glut from the shale gale, from the Marcellus and the Utica shales. To your point, with the Permian and with the Bakken, with the oil sands. So it's just getting that product to market, and we have the product. We're able to get it out of the ground economically. Now we just have to build the infrastructure, and if we build it, the market will come.
Okay.
Stephen Schork, the Schork Report, and it's S-C-H-O-R-K. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. It was great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, folks, have a great day. You've been listening to Straight Talk Money. As my dad would say, God bless you and your families. We'll see you tomorrow at the regular time.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.